The season is saved. A two-game winning streak against Montreal and Ottawa of all teams as the Canucks return home. It's a whole new situation here in Vancouver, Drancer. There is no room for you to be negative on this episode of the VanCast.
Oh, you just wait. You just wait, bud. That's a challenge I accept.
Alrighty. The Canucks with a very impressive 6-2 win against a reeling Ottawa team. Just watching both teams attempt to defend in that game. And look, the Canucks weren't necessarily bad doing it, but what we've grown accustomed to seeing from the Canucks the last couple of weeks, and certainly all of last season, it looked an awful lot like what I saw from Ottawa in this game. Wow, could it not have been a better situation for the Canucks? All of their struggling players, save for Brock Besser, all of these guys have bumped the slump. And look, there's a lot to contextualize around the fact that it's the two teams that they played. But all that said, probably a little bit of weight removed off some guys after last night.
Yeah, and you're happy for them because they worked hard all trip, right? I mean, other than the Pittsburgh game, which was a debacle, I thought there was a pretty high effort level collectively against Columbus, against Boston. And then finally they got rewarded against two of the bottom five teams in the league, and good for them. They worked hard. You know, that's things could have come apart at the seams. The noise from outside was deafening, and they kind of pulled it together and played well, played hard, defended well, goaltending held up, special teams got just enough done. That Ottawa Senators team, though, I think we are 2 weeks away from discussing whether they're historically bad, to be totally honest with you, Farhan. Like, tonight, they go from losing to the Canucks on Wednesday to on Thursday night, playing in Carolina, having traveled there for the second leg of a back-to-back against a really good Hurricanes team that lost to Braden Holtby and the Dallas Stars just a couple nights ago. So they're going to be a hungry opponent facing a brutal and tired Senators team with Anton Forsberg in net. Yikes. Then they play Colorado, then they play the Islanders and the, I don't know, someone else who's not that good. So like, better win one of those two, because then their next three games are against the Florida teams. Like, I'm just saying, they could have four wins by Christmas. The Senators Wow. could have four or five wins total by Christmas. So yeah, good for the Canucks. Well done. You get to come home feeling a little better. Some pressure is off. Hopefully you have a nice day off. Enjoy some Vancouver sunshine finally. And then a positive practice day on Friday. And then you've got a Pittsburgh Penguins team that completely trounced you, you know, just 10 days ago in this building on Saturday night. Always special when Sidney Crosby plays in Vancouver, especially considering his history here. But man, like, you know, let's not make too much of it, right? Like, that Senators team is garbage.
Well, look, they are. But in fairness, right, these are all professional hockey teams. They all win at some point. And we've seen the Canucks. I mean, go back a couple of weeks, they lose to a really bad Chicago team. Won nothing. And there have been games earlier this season where they just haven't been good enough regardless of their opponent. So at some point, you got to control your own process. And yes, it's easier against teams that are reeling like Montreal and Ottawa. And look, we know what it looks like, right? Because the Canucks have looked like that team a lot in the last few years. And I don't want to completely dismiss the wins. And that's not just me trying to be, you know, the house of positivity. I don't want to dismiss them because we've seen the Canucks play these types of teams and still not come out with any level of result at all.
I'm not dismissing them. I mean, this Canucks team has played as well as they could have 5-on-5. Like, there are things that this team does decently well when they're working hard. And, you know, credit to them. Like, I'm not taking away from that either. But I also think it's important to point out the Canucks have won 8 games. Only one of those wins has come against a team in the top half of the NHL standings.
Yeah, and they're going to face some better teams coming up here, no question about it. And, you know, that was one of the points I know J-Pat made a while ago, that they're losing games and they hadn't even played a top five team yet. So when you look at what's in front of them right now, you've got Pittsburgh. You talked about it on Saturday.
Bad matchup for them. Pittsburgh's got a lot of forward speed.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a long homestand. They've got games in between. There's no back-to-backs. They play LA, Boston, Winnipeg, and then, you know, another real tough one against Carolina. And then yep, Columbus to wrap up a six Yeah, for sure. To wrap up a six-game homestand. So, you know, no easy ones here. Even the Kings have been better. The Jets have been better.
Columbus is a tough out.
Yeah, no question. So, when you look at that, then they go to San Jose, come back and face the Leafs. So, this is a tough month for this team.
Yeah, it is.
There's no question. And as much as we've talked about what the future holds, it's going to be on display right now, right? Like, yeah. There is every opportunity based on this schedule for things to completely fall apart. And we'll get to the speculation around what's in front of them, or sorry, what's behind them in terms of names and what they could be doing, because there's a lot to dive into there that has really has taken off in the last few days since we've done our last pod. But let's stick with the players really quickly. And, you know, we saw Pettersson score, like, just a perfect Pettersson goal against yep. Montreal. And we've seen since then, JT Miller score a goal of the year by Canucks standards. Like, that's a goal that Connor McDavid should be proud of. Like, that's a McDavid-esque goal. You saw Quinn Hughes with a plethora of assists in the last game. You saw Bo Horvat, right, with a seeing eye shot. You know, we've seen some guys that have not only scored, but they've scored well, right? Like, the types of goals that will take a little bit of pressure off you.
Yep.
Do you think there'll be any carryover, or in 2 days are we just saying, yeah, but that was Ottawa-Montreal?
Well, there has to be carryover, right? I mean, that's on the team. That's incumbent on the team. And because it's not about carrying over Montreal and Ottawa for me. It's about carrying over Columbus, Boston, Montreal, and Ottawa, right? It's like, that's your template now. You know, that's your template. Play like that. Play like that. If you can play like that, you'll win at a 90-ish point pace over the balance of the season. You know, maybe 95 if you get really, really good goaltending and you fix the PK. You know, so it's like, yeah, I mean, that's the standard. You have your template now. You know what it looks like when this team is bought in, when they're all working, when they're all playing hard. And it looks like it did for most of this road trip, results aside. That's the template. That's the carryover that you need to hold. It's not about the result. It's not that you want JT Miller to go end-to-end through four guys, because he's not going to be able to do that against everybody. Like, you know, that's okay. He will sometimes, because JT Miller's damn good player, but, like, that's not what I expect from JT Miller on a night-to-night basis. That's not what I expect from Bo Horvat. I don't expect Connor Garland to be on the ice for 20 shot attempts for and two against on an every-night basis, but I think what fans should expect from this team is for them to look like they did over the latter four games of this road trip. And if they can do that at home, they'll be fine. Like, they'll be fine. They're not going to be killers. They're still not a stud team. They still struggle to break the puck out against even a small breath of pressure, forechecking pressure. But they should be good enough to hold the fort 5-on-5, not bleed too many chances against, and hopefully not look like a team that's just constantly on their heels. But we also know, when they play speed, when they face really fast forward groups, things can look a little dicey. They didn't face any really fast forward groups in the latter four games of that road trip. They will on Saturday night. Can they handle that? That's the big question. But if you play like you did for most of this road trip, you're going to be, you know, a 90 to 95 point pace team based on the talent you have up front and the quality of your goaltending, if you can fix the special teams at all. And I think that's a realistic expectation for this Canucks team to achieve. And yet, with all of that said, Farhan, they've dug themselves such a deep hole that even if you do that, you're looking at being the 23rd or 22nd place team in the league, you know, because you'll just get to like 80-ish points or 75 points or 78 points in and around there.
We're kind of at a point now where we really do need to stop talking about playoffs, don't we? Like, and making that the benchmark, because I get what the organization said earlier, but they've certainly dug themselves a hole deep enough that we need to just focus on the form and not what they need to do to get into the playoffs, right? Like, see how they're playing, see what the results are going forward. This hole was so bad. We know it's not a fluke. It was a result of roster construction. But all of that said, you know, being a fan and being able to go and attend a reasonably played hockey game with a team where, you know, if they do what they're capable of, you got a chance to see some results, and just kind of stop talking about playoffs for a while.
Yeah. I mean, Dom Lecision's model has them at a 1% chance of making the postseason at this point. He has them projected for 76 points at this juncture in the season.
If the Canucks go 500 this month, Like, do we need to continue to sit, to talk about them in a playoff context and say, well, no, they need to play 650 hockey to get in, or can we just focus on what's happening? Like, what? And I'm not asking that rhetorically. I'm asking that legitimately.
You need to win 8 of 10 for us to talk about them being a long shot to make the playoffs, Farhan.
But that's my point. I want to stop doing that. I want to just talk about this team on a game-by-game or every two games basis when we generally do our podcasts and just talk about what we're seeing as opposed to what they need to do, because we know what they are. And they're not a team equipped to go on that kind of run. So can we talk about what they are, you know, yeah, and sure. Fans collectively? Or do we need to all the time look at them and say, nah, this is all pointless?
Well,
because you're not making the playoffs.
No, I mean, it's not pointless, though. It's like, you know, I think it's important to keep the focus on this team's stated goals, right? This team came into the year talking explicitly about making the playoffs, and they're not going to.
That's over, but it's over.
I know, but it doesn't matter, because that's still the standard by which this team must be judged. How far short did they fall in an all-in season? That matters. Until a change is made, that matters. While stasis reigns, while leadership remains in place, then the extent of the failure matters. It matters to measure it. It matters to hold this team against the standard by which they themselves declared they should be held to. Until they change direction meaningfully. That's my view of it anyway.
No, that's fair. I just think that going forward, if we continue to look at the playoffs as a bar, we're not going to be able to talk about what we're seeing in front of us, right? Like what we're seeing on a nightly basis. Because all of a sudden, if there is improvement, we're going to put that in the context of just how massive the improvement needs to be.
Right.
And that might make for a real difficult season.
No, but it's, again, that's the standard. That's the standard that matters. Like, you know, they pushed so many chips in for this season. You know, they don't have meaningful cap flexibility. They don't have a ton of prospects. They don't even own their 2022 second round pick. And it looks like that pick will be in the 30s, most likely. Right? Like that'll be a 38th, 39th overall pick. So until there's a change, until they start making trades, until they change leadership in some manner, until they chart a new direction, bring in a president, until they change the conversation, the focus has to be on how far short they fell. That's my opinion. Like, that's my view, because that's where this team is at. That's the bed they've made.
Yeah, look, it's fair. And I get that, because they're the ones who stated the goals. They put it out in front of themselves. I just think that we are chasing our tails here, right? Like, I would rather just, for me, like, I want to watch Elias Pettersson and see what happens going forward, because what's happened to this point has been disastrous, but I want to see what happens going forward. I want to know that, is this still a player the franchise can build around? Like, yeah. We know they're tied to it financially for 3 years. We know they're tied to Quinn Hughes for 6 years. And we know that, you know, those are the bedrock foundational pieces for this team. But if you tell me that Elias Pettersson for the rest of the season winds up with, you know, is a point a game player for the remaining 60 games, right? And Quinn Hughes does certain things. And like, if I can just see certain things, I can get past the fact that they're not going to make the playoffs, because I've already wrapped my head around it. And yeah. I don't know how fans feel about it, but there are other things this organization needs to concern itself with. Let's say Benning gets fired. Let's say they bring in person X, whoever it happens to be. And, you know, that person is still going to be looking at the same things in terms of how to chart the future course. So we can sit here and be obsessed about the playoffs for the rest of the year, and we know what that conversation sounds like. We know we're not going anywhere. Or we can start looking a little deeper on a nightly basis into what the fundamental problems are, and if we're seeing a life raft, just any sign of life that these guys can show us that they could be who we think they're going to be going forward, rather than just say, man, those 22 games were bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're never going to catch up. That's a tough dialogue to have game after game after game.
You're right, it is. And you know, I think you're right in the extent that, like, what really matters, like, what's the biggest on-ice storyline for this team over the balance of the season? For me, it's Elias Pettersson finding his game, right?
Totally.
Does Elias Pettersson look in the second sort of 75% of the season, you know, significantly different than he's looked through 24 games? That would be a huge development, because that changes everything in terms of how close you think you are, you know, how you move forward. So for me, that's step one. You know, Quinn Hughes, I think, has been lumped in with Besser and Pedersen's struggles in people's mind's eyes. Like, people have been like, oh, well, their young players, their best young players are struggling. But Quinn Hughes hasn't struggled. Quinn Hughes has been, to me, incredible. I still think he's got another level to hit. And so, you know, for me, that's the least of your concerns. But the impact that Luke Shen has had on his pair, on a pair with him, I do think shines a light on, you know, what this club needs now, which is another top four quality righty who's a little more defensively reliable than Tyler Myers, like capable of caddying Quinn Hughes to elite results, as opposed to what he's looked like with Pullman or what he's looked like with Hamonic. You know, the fact
that we get a sense of where Hamonic was in the back end of the road trip. Like, what happened there?
I seems like he was sick. Like, seems like he was ill. So we'll like see.
Just regular sick.
Yep, just regular sick. And we'll see if he's back on the ice with the team on Friday. I'd assume he will be. And then I think there's a really tough discussion about who comes out. Because on merit, I think it's pretty clearly Tucker Pullman. And yet Pullman, I mean, we're only, how many games? 24 of 328 games into the Tucker Pullman era. Are they going to scratch him for game 304?
At $2.5 million?
I mean, are they going to do that? That's what they should do. But I don't know if they will. I think we might see Pullman play with Shen on the left side and Hamonic go back up with Hughes. That would be what I expect when the Canucks practice on Friday. But what should happen, I think, is Hamonic Burrows with Pullman drawing out.
Well, lots to dive in there as far as that. You know, I want to get into the Kevin Epps story as well as
I just don't. Some of the can the we names not?
That, well, well, no. Well, look, you're making me talk about playoffs. I'm going to make you talk about that. But first.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about the comments that came out of the agent for Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the agent for Jake Virtanen, who's no longer here, and many others. Kevin Epp, local guy here in Vancouver, like, just you and I have both spent time talking to him. He is a really, really good guy, and obviously he's a good agent in order to have
I've never spoken with him, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have, and look, I really think he's a good person. I love interacting with him. Totally good guy. And I get that an agent's job is to protect his clients, try to create the right environment for his clients, and so on and so forth. So it you know, it doesn't necessarily surprise me that he's going to push back against any negative narratives. I mean, he did that when Jake was still here, even though we kind of all knew what we were seeing in front of us. But, you know, this notion that it's such a negative environment, and look, it's easy for me as a veteran member of the media now. I mean, I shake my head to think I'm second in terms of tenure for covering this team behind IMAC at only 53 years of age. So, you know, I see all of this. And yeah, like, you know, I'm always that guy that kind of chafes at the label of the media, the big bad media, like we're some heartless entity whose agenda it is to destroy everything in its wake and that we want to cover negativity. And it would certainly look like that if you saw this team. But the truth is, this team deserves the coverage they get. Like, what they've done for the past 8 years, and especially the last, you know, 3 to 4, from a roster standpoint, is unfathomable. It's ridiculous. And yet, we're negative. You know, like, I think the media environment around this team has been as easy as it's been in some years. And, you know, I look back to how that 2011 team got covered, right? And forget the fact that they were good. I'm just talking about volume of coverage. Right? Just volume of coverage. It's nothing like it used to be. It's not even close. And, you know, for the last 2 years, we haven't been able to go into a locker room and be face-to-face with players. They've kind of come out. It's, you know, you barely see a guy once a week. I don't know that the environment could be easier to avoid. And as far as the tone of the coverage, more justified, it's unbelievable to me that that would be the narrative. And do players really not want to come here because the media is negative, or do they maybe not want to come here because this team consistently loses?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter. There's no question about it. You know what? I really don't have a ton of appetite for Epps' comments, but I do think it fits within a wider patchwork of comments made about this city and its fan base over the course of the past 10 days in the hockey world. And I think about, you know, Connor Garland was on the Spitting Chicklets podcast, and, you know, there were jokes about how sensitive Vancouver is. Obviously, that's, you know, a reference mostly to the reaction that fans in the market had when Elias Pettersson joined the podcast from the, you know, Barstool perspective. But, you know, the idea of Vancouverites is like super sensitive. And then Brad Marchand took a shot at Canadian fans and the passion of fans because he was asked a question about a comment that Anson Carter said John Garrett made, that of course John Garrett hadn't made, in regards to the slew foot that Brad Marchand had thrown on Ekman-Larsson, which resulted in a 3-game suspension. Although, as Jack Edwards noted, it wasn't noticed in the building that night. And he's right. I was there. I didn't really notice that it was a big deal, especially because I didn't have the benefit of John Garrett's, you know, Hawkeyes noticing it on the replay and pointing it out immediately. So,
yeah, it was a bad play for sure.
It was a bad play, but I'm just saying.
Justified.
If Jack Edwards, the only thing that Jack Edwards said that was ridiculous was alleged. It was a slew foot. There's tons of replay, but the idea that it wasn't noticed in building, he's not wrong. There was no penalty call. I didn't notice it in building, so I just thought it was a big hit. So, you know, I found myself torn because I was agreeing with Jack Edwards. Although I must say, I really admire Jack's work. Anyway, you know, you sort of put it together, and there's, you know, Brian Burke also had a comment on Toronto radio about how Vancouver in this market, they hate everything. And I think, you know, Vancouverites, I think some Vancouver hockey fans have like internalized that like, this is the worst market. It's the worst market. And the hockey world certainly seems to think it's an entity that, you know, people struggle with. And then people are like, well, the media just ignores their role and how toxic this all is. And, you know, you can point to riots, you can point to some things that would seem to be evidence. But like, you know, I think about Daniel Wagner, the Pasitabulis account, doing like the positive tweets all game yesterday, right? Including the Adam Gaudette scores. And he goes, Adam Gaudette scores, like, what a great draft pick by Jim Benning. And I'm just laughing in the press box. And it's this reminder to me of how fun and goofy it can be to cover this team because of the engagement around it, which is unlike anything else in the NHL. You know, this market is different in terms of its appetites than the cold prairie towns between us and Upper Canada, and it's certainly different than the tone of coverage in Upper Canada and in Quebec. And, you know, this team matters to people. It matters a lot. People are super passionate and they're super informed, super savvy. There's a huge appetite for analytics and for down the middle coverage and for objective coverage and for calm coverage. You know, you don't have to have hot takes in this market to stand out. You can be the best at explaining things and build an audience by just being reliable and fair and accurate. You know, we have like an insider like Dhaliwal who beats the national guys on local scoops like all the time at a rate that is actually pretty rare in other markets. When the Pettersson Hughes deals were going down, it was mostly the locals that were ahead of the story. There's just so many people covering this team well and intelligently, and there's such a diverse appetite among fans for different types of information and stories about this team. And it's the only show in town, and it's Canada where it's everything. And I do think that the particular shape of it takes on, you know, is unique because unlike the Alberta, the cities in Alberta, the Canucks haven't won a cup. Right. Unlike Winnipeg, we're not just glad to be here. Right. Unlike in Ottawa, we still care about this team. And so, you know, there's this notion that this fan base is like at fault, or this media market, or this market is so toxic, and it's fun. It's great. And the players who played here when it was great will tell you that it was the best, that it was fantastic. You know, when you hear Yannick Hansen and Kevin Bieksa and some of the other former players, Roberto Luongo, Ryan Kesler, the Twins, talk about the heyday, Christian Ehrhoff, like, it was great to be a Vancouver Canucks player. Is it harder to lose here than it is elsewhere? Sure. But
it's better to win here.
Build it and they will come, man. Build it and they will come. The idea, like, the self-loathing inherent, right, in the... And it's funny because it's mostly the biggest defenders of this regime, right, which has driven this franchise basically an 18-wheeler off a cliff, right? A long, slow 18-wheeler inexorably going toward the cliff that was this fall for the Canucks, especially the last 13 months, really. You know, those people will be like, this is the worst fan base. They don't understand, you know, how good Tucker Pullman is. Like, oh, they're all over Ekman-Larsson. They haven't even seen him, but you didn't even watch him. And it's like, Ekman-Larsson has exceeded expectations, although not mine. I thought he'd be fine. I thought he'd be a totally fine second pair guy. He's been better than that, but not you know, he's not a world beater. He hasn't moved the needle for this club. You know, the fact is that it's okay to care. It's okay to support your team critically. It's okay to criticize one of the most mismanaged franchises in the sport. And you know, the outsiders sort of pointing fingers and laughing, like, fine, that's fine. This team in this league is at its best when the Canucks are crushing it and everyone hates them except the fans. And that's always going to be the dynamic, because these people don't represent Vancouver. They don't care about Vancouver. They like to poke fun and make fun of Vancouver. And that's fine. You do you. The point is not to take umbrage at that. The point is not to be defensive about that. The point is that hopefully, eventually, this team gives fans in this market something to be right about, something to celebrate. And that hasn't happened in far too long, and that's shaping the discourse around this team far more than any media toxicity. So, you know, I just think this is like a wider problem, a fundamental misunderstanding of what this market is. And I just look around and see the jokes and see the armies and see the fans that I interact with and the people that I chat with. And I notice a deep level of knowledge and passion for this team. And the idea that those people are doing it wrong, that the people who support this team, you know, even through bad times as a top 10 revenue team in hockey, like, the idea that that's a bad thing for the game, that's a small horizon viewpoint by far too many in this sport.
Yeah, I mean, look, I look at it, and when you look at some of the coverage that's been out there, like, you know, I wouldn't suggest that when the Oliver Ekman-Larsson signing happened that people didn't give it a chance. I think we broke down the numbers and where the forum was headed. I would think collectively we all thought there could be a bump for a couple of years, right? The bigger concern was where this contract was going to take them 6 years down the road, right?
Yep.
And the fact that they were almost in position to get rid of the weight of Louis Erickson's deal, and then we get to this point, right? So that was fair criticism in my estimation. And you know what? He's given us that bump in the first year, and he'll probably give the club that bump in the second year, third year. No, you're right.
What's funny about the Ekman-Larsson deal is he's exceeded expectations, and the deal is a bigger disaster than we realized. Like, both things are true. He's played really well. Garland's played really well. And because this team's bad and now also doesn't have much in the system, like, doesn't have the, you know, Chaz Lucius or the Cole Sillinger or the Dylan Gunther that you would have been able to pick with that ninth overall pick. And because they don't have cap flexibility now, it's like, what, that deal hosed you. You're both bad and have no clear route to improving. It's a really complicated one.
Yeah. Like, the deal, the contract itself has done what we expected it to do, just because that's the way it was going to work, right? Like, there was no way around that. You know, we knew what that number was going to do to their cap flexibility. The case the club would have made was, he's a centerpiece and we've done so much else to improve that this will get us there. So yeah, he's improved, but he's not gotten you there, right? So yeah, you're right. Both things are true in this case. And in the Tucker Pullman case, I think we collectively looked at that deal and thought the numbers were terrible. The deployment was terrible. And you didn't learn from your mistake with Tyler Myers.
Yeah.
Like this was Tyler Myers light.
You didn't learn from your mistake with Beagle and Roussel. They cleared out all these overpriced contracts for bottom of the lineup contributors that were too much money for too long. And now they have the guy being outperformed by Luke Shen, who signed for 2 years at $850K. Like, that's the whole reason you can't do those deals, is that you can find those guys. And they did. Like, we're seeing it happen in front of our eyes.
But the performance of Poolman is exactly what was billed and exactly what was expected. Like, that's the challenge of it. It's not just the money. It's that people looked at him and said, what are you doing here? And exactly, he is doing exactly what he's previously done.
Well, and throw in Tanner Pearson. Throw in Tanner Pearson, because again, there's an opportunity cost in that you didn't net assets for him at a deadline in which he would have been highly sought after, and at which he was one of your only assets that was COVID negative, right? Like, he was injured when the outbreak happened, so he never tested positive. He never was on COVID protocols. So he would have had, his value was not impacted at all by the outbreak, which happened just before the deadline. He would have been probably the most highly sought after left wing on the market. Maybe second behind Nick Foligno and ahead of Taylor Hall. So we're talking about a second and a prospect, sort of low end expected return. And, you know, there,
you could have signed him in the offseason if you wanted.
You could have signed him in the offseason, or you could have signed Nick Ritchie or Andrzej Kasia or Ryan Dzingel or whatever. I mean, there were tons of options and tons of guys that signed for a fraction of the money, but they do that deal and we're what, 24 games into that contract, a 3-year deal at 3.25. And like, Tanner Pearson looks like a third or fourth liner, right? And I love me some Tanner Pearson. He competes every night. He's one of the few Canucks who you will find in the dirty areas of the rink, game in, game out. Right? I think Tanner Pearson's a really good piece. The deal just didn't make sense for the Canucks with where they were at and what they needed long term. And it's like, it only took us 6 weeks for that to be crystal clear. Like, that's not a bet that aged poorly in year three. That's a bet that aged poorly the day it was signed. Same with Poolman. You know, we're 25 games into the Ekman-Larsson bet, and he's outperformed expectations, and that bet already looks terrible because the team's bad and now has no prospects and no flexibility. Doesn't even matter how well he plays. Like, that's the definition of a bad trade. Disaster. And what we're supposed to be negative for pointing this out? We dissed Jim because we commented that the Pearson deal was, you know, backwards thinking, evidence of backwards thinking the day it was signed. It only took 4 months to be clear.
Sure. Look, you're not wrong, but the context is that they've misevaluated themselves and where they're at as a franchise on the ice, right? Like,
right.
They're not taking the long-term view. They're like, we're in now because we got to survive. And they misevaluated who they are and where they are today. And that's why those decisions were made. They felt they were closer. They felt that this is what the fans wanted. And, you know, those types of thoughts lead to bad decisions. And that's where we are today, right? So
you have to know who you are.
You've got a franchise making decisions, or a management team making decisions based on where they think they are versus where they actually are.
Where they hope they are, in fact. It's even worse than where they think they are. It's where they hope they are. And if you can't evaluate yourself, if you can't evaluate your own players, if you can't evaluate the character of your own players, right? If you think that you need Beagle and Roussel for leadership and then 2 years later lose the actual glue guy in Chris Tanev, you know, like, if you can't evaluate yourself, there's no way you'll ever be able to evaluate 18-year-olds, and there's no way you'll ever be able to evaluate players playing for other teams. And, like, they can't even evaluate themselves. That's, you're dead in the water when that's the case. And that's why, you know, the team's won two in a row and people are probably tuning in hoping for some positivity. And, you know, you're not going to find it from me. We know what this team is. This team is nowhere close to good enough. The season's lost by early December. They seem to be paralyzed in terms of making changes that the whole industry knows are necessary. They have a general manager who doesn't seem to have autonomy based on what the industry thinks, based on the fact that, you know, names have leaked out in connection to a potential coaching replacement, but those replacements haven't been made, with the likes of Darren Dreger, your colleague at TSN, reporting that if Jim Benny had the authority to replace a coach, he would have. Right. I mean, that was reported by Dreger on the Sakaris and Price podcast. And, you know, so where does that sort of leave us? It leaves us in this waiting game period where, yeah, you beat Montreal and you beat Ottawa. Great. Like, good. The team is working. That's what I'll give them. I'll give them that they are working, and that there are some interesting young pieces that if they can get going, you know, the Canucks could yet have good bones, but they don't have good options to improve this team in the short term or detonate this team for the long term. It's going to be an enormously difficult challenge to get this on track. And you are wasting time every day you go forward in this, you know, state of stasis without beginning to chart a long-term plan to get this organization back among the, you know, 7 or 8 teams that really do know what they're doing and seem to consistently be able to win games and mine value from the market and in this difficult league.
Well, for me, the headline is, hey, the Canucks won 6-2 against Ottawa. They are back 2 straight. Drancer, you mentioned what Dregs had to say, that if Jim Benning had the autonomy to make a change, he would have. We've heard reports from Elliot Friedman that the Canucks have been talking to names like Claude Julien and Scotty Walker, among others. Yet, here we are. And there's only one person in the organization talking. He's still employed. You can debate the level of his job security. The Canucks are coming off 2 straight wins. And again, we understand who they beat. But all that said, you know, there could be ownership looking at this and saying, we've had 4 really solid games and we got 2 wins and deserve better in the other 2. And, you know, we're okay now. We're okay now. We can just continue to push it forward down the road until the next crisis before we have to address it. Do you expect that to be the plan, or do you expect meaningful change could be upon us?
I think meaningful change is upon us, but I think it's going to be slow coming. And, you know, I mean, I said this for a while. I said that I thought the most likely outcome here was that the club would do their best to leg through this season and make off-season changes, because that's how they do it. That's their preference, right? We haven't seen much in the way of in-season changes from this organization since the Aquilini family became majority owners of the club. So, you know, I'm sure they'd love to keep buying themselves some time. But when you see Frank Saravalli report at Daily Faceoff that, you know, there's questions within the industry, this matches what I'm hearing about Benning's autonomy and ability to make a core altering deal. You know, when you read between the lines of the names leaking out on the coaching side and the fact that a change hasn't happened, when you sort of go through all of the underlying facts, I mean, it does seem like, in fact, this is sort of the last act of this era of Canucks hockey, and that, you know, there will be a new voice charting a direction at some point. It's just that, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the organization would be better served to make those changes with a higher degree of responsiveness and proactiveness than they've shown to this point. And I don't expect that to be the case necessarily, although, hey, I could be surprised. What I don't think is that even if the team were to go on a decent run, like not a get back in the playoffs run, sorry to bring this back up, Farhan, but like a decent run in December, like I don't think that's going to change the math that this team's not good enough fundamentally, that's become apparent, and that, you know, confidence needs to be rebuilt in this market, and that probably does start with new leadership.
Yeah, for me, like, it's a case of when, not if, right now. And you know, that's the million-dollar question, right? Are they going to make the decision now? And we've talked about what that decision should be. We've talked about when it should happen and whether or not they should make the change to who they're going to now, or whether or not they should just kind of go with internal pieces to kind of get them through to a certain period of time, you know, whether it be a Ryan Johnson, Brad Hunt, or what have you. Let's stick with the coaching piece for a moment, because we have debated various times throughout the season on this podcast about whether or not the players, particularly the youngest players, have the attention, or whether the coach has their attention, and whether or not, you know, we don't necessarily think that Travis has lost the room, but that he may have lost one or two key guys. What does their effort level, because you talked about it, you just said they're playing hard, I'll give them that, and that's all I'll give them, right? So for the last four games, because the math now is what it was four games ago, they were out of it then and they're still out of it now. The fact that they are still playing hard, given the stakes, what does that tell you about where the coach is at with his players?
I mean, still grinding, you know? I just, like...
But do you think they need a new voice, or are they still responding to the current voice?
In terms of what, though? In terms of what's next, or in terms of getting through the season?
In terms of their work rate today, does their work rate match change? Right? Like, we know their output.
I mean,
we know their output did, but does their work rate, you know?
Yeah, my view of this is sort of that, like, you know, things have gotten so bad in terms of organizational results that I don't know how you move forward with many of the pieces that have been in place to this point. You know, I do think probably as the club looks to reset, should the club reset, I think, you know, change behind the bench probably feels pretty inevitable too. Once you change manager, if that is indeed what the club decides to do. But I also don't think the club is, like, I don't think it's fair to say that the club's tuned out their coach based on, you know, what we're seeing in terms of the work rate. So, you know, it doesn't look to me like a group that's quit on the coach. It does look to me like a group that's flawed and has some problems. You know, I put it this way. I don't think a coaching change is sufficient to solve this organization's issues. I think anyone who's been telling themselves that in the early part of the season is lying to themselves. I think you've seen enough that maybe you see over the balance of the season what you've got in terms of how the group responds to the coaching staff before making a decision. But, you know, I don't think that the way that the season has played out on the whole, you know, is necessarily a case for stasis in any spot, including behind the bench. But that said, I think the case for Travis Green's better now than it was after the Pittsburgh game, certainly, right? Yeah, where there was real doubt about whether or not he'd coach in Columbus the next day, right?
Was there really?
I think so. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
You're right. Like, at the end of the day, I think we all understand that the organization needs a significant direction change, that a coaching change is simply not enough. Now, whether or not a coaching change happens in the short term just to satisfy some other short-term agenda, you know, that's a completely different story. I'm not sure, again, that what we've seen of late from the players necessarily matches that. Already? What's that, a coaching change?
I thought if we were going to see one, like, I thought if we were going to see the, like, oh, well, we did something type coaching change, that it would have happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you could be right. And the fact that those names are out there, and the fact that Benning does not have the autonomy to make that decision, does probably speak volumes, because if he had it, it sounds like it would have happened already. So, you know, does that mean that the first change to happen becomes a general manager change, much like what happened in Montreal? We'll find out pretty quick here.
Well, that's at least good process. Like, that's how it should go. If you think that the problem is higher up the chain, make that change first and let the new guy sort it out. Like, that's part of doing things the right way, no?
Yeah, totally. Like, that would make sense, that have your new general manager make a decision, because to me, you simply can't fire Travis Green today and replace him with a name coach that's not currently in the organization. That makes no sense whatsoever. Because if you replace Travis with somebody you've got to bring in, you can't bring anybody in of any level of credibility without giving him something in his contract. You've got to give him term, or you've got to give him a big number. You've got to do something to get any reasonably tenured, experienced, credible coach in this situation. Like, there's just no other way around it. So what are you doing? You're setting yourself up for more financial failure and more delay because of that potential financial failure. So if you're going to move on from Travis, you've just got to replace him with an interim guy that's off the current staff like a Brad Shaw. Like, that's just the way it has to happen. I'm not advocating for a coaching change. I'm just telling you, if you do, that's the smart thing to do. And if you make a managerial change, that, again, if you make a managerial change, if you think you've got the home run hire today for long term, great. I'm not sure who that is. But if you think you've got that, great. But don't rush it just to save face, because I've said before, the hallmark of this organization is they simply want to not win the press conference. They want to avoid the press conference, right? Yeah. So they want to avoid answering questions about how bad they screwed it up. They want to be able to ask questions about what's next in the future and point to that. So to me, the smart thing to do would be to, if you're going to make a general manager change and have Ryan Johnson take over, and then take your time to make the right decision in that spot, and then allow him to make the right decision at the coaching staff level. That's how I think the smart thing to do. I don't think they necessarily do it that way, because they just don't want to face that moment. So, you know, that just leads us into the abyss. So the fortunate thing that could happen, is they could find, like, Montreal brought in Jeff Gorton, and we looked at that and thought, it's a pretty good hire. Or, like, that's a guy that understands what a rebuild, what an honest, transparent rebuild looks like. He's attempted to execute that, right? So you look at it, and you know, who they put in place is legitimate. Whereas, well, the Canucks rush to just avoid that moment in the press conference of admitting failure, as opposed to being able to spin the story forward. So that's kind of how I look at this in terms of what they should do versus what they in all likelihood will do. The fact that Jim doesn't have the autonomy to fire Travis is a good thing, because then they won't let him make a deeper mistake. It means that you know, that management level is under as much scrutiny as coaching level. And if management level is under scrutiny, then at least ownership is looking at maybe a big picture solution versus a quick fix here. Right.
Well, so, although, can they resist the temptation if the club does reel off 10 of 12 wins in December and is back up to 10th in the West? Can they resist the temptation of doing further damage?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like if they all of a sudden win 10 of 12 and go on a mini heater, they'll be buyers at the trade deadline. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's the other problem with not being decisive in charting a new direction for your club. Right. And so, There's enough talent here, especially in goal, that you could go on a completely undeserved heater.
Well, with all of that said, you know, as we circle back to the question of negativity, this is the one time where if you're a fan, you should probably want this team to tread water and not go on that mini heater. So that bad, I'm not kidding.
Wow.
So that
what
is, bad
what
decision,
sabotage.
So that bad decisions don't get made. You know what I mean? Like, as you're investing emotionally, the smart thing would be because I can't imagine that a single fan in Canuck Nation really believes, like, you can blame one or the other, right? Like, you can blame coach, you can blame GM, but there's not a single person in Canuck Nation that believes things are headed in the right direction. You can't possibly. This market is too educated.
They're just a couple kills away, a couple bounces. Yeah.
Like, the market is too smart to truly believe that. They might think we're negative. They might think we're negative, and that's cool, right? Like, that's part of the media. You know, like, I'll tell you guys, I would much rather cover the 2011 Canucks than the 2021 Canucks, right? Like, we want to tell the good stories. Trust me, we want to tell the good stories. We don't revel in losing. We don't, but we got to work either way. So our job is to cover the team, and then in some cases articulate the rage of the fan base. But the reality is the fan base should be hoping that this team just treads water. Enough winning that you're at least not completely disillusioned, somewhat entertained, but not enough where you're delusional. Because if you as a fan are delusional, so is ownership.
Love it. I'm with you, bud. And good. We've done good work sabotaging the team today.
Yeah, mediocrity lives here. Listen, as we go, Canucks have got 6 straight home games here, starting with the Saturday in Pittsburgh. I will actually be watching that one on TV because I will be in Winnipeg for the CFL Western Final. So I won't be in the press box kibitzing negativity with you and J-Pat. I'll stay in my hotel room and be positive in my hotel room for mediocrity. Hey, listen, Ian Mendez and Down Goes Brown have the Athletic Hockey Show Thursday at The Athletic. Meanwhile, we would like to thank all of you for listening to the House of Mediocrity right here. You know, and a lot of you have posted about, you know, your favorite pods, your top rated pods. And I know that the VanCast has been atop most of your hockey listening. And I know I'm not taking any credit for that because you're the heart and soul of it. And J-Pat did such a great job. And I'm just kind of filling in as the dessert here. But
I'm giving you lots of credit. I think it's all Farhan.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Mr. Analytics right here. Hey, thanks for listening to the VanCast. Please allow us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us, I should say, on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review. You can subscribe, download. Also subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial and then just 99 cents a month after that. And right now, you get annual subscriptions to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/thevancast. And we will return next week, well after the Canucks bounce back with a big-time performance against the Pittsburgh Penguins after showing them what they missed out on at the beginning of this road
trip. I can see that, by the way. I think this is a good, like, you know, they found their form after Pittsburgh. I think you're going to see a hungry team on Saturday. Could be an interesting one.
There you go. We'll be here to talk about it. Thanks for listening.